afternoon, everyone. Welcome, Musa, to our Commerce Talks GCC edition. You are our first guest from Egypt. Alex, hello. Welcome to the podcast. So, Musa, can you give us a quick introduction into you, the brand you represent, and we will go over all the questions like usual.
Definitely. First, hi, Lina. Hi, Alex. Hi, everyone that's listening. It's a pleasure to be on the podcast because, believe it or not, I came across the podcast before you guys invite me. I was at one of the Seamless events and we crossed paths, and then that's how I came across the podcast through your LinkedIn.
Okay, so let me take a note here. Listener number 5, Musa Asfour. Oh, okay, no, that's a joke. We just tried to find real-world proof that people are listening to the podcast.
I just got that now. Okay. It's about quality, not quantity. So 5 is good. Yeah, so I was just saying, I came across you guys. It's a pleasure to actually be here today talking to both of you. And you did well by picking me as the first speaker from Egypt, because by coincidence, we are the biggest retail player in Egypt. So it works well for both of us. Hopefully this opens more doors to the Egyptian market for you. I studied engineering growing up because the family is all from an engineering manufacturing background. I started my career in B2B businesses, basically in management teams at very big factories that work on very long and extended B2B projects. Very quickly, I realized that this is not the life I want. I don't want to work on something and wait for customer feedback a year late. Like this, it's not engaging enough for me. It doesn't feed my, it doesn't charge my battery in a way. And that's where the challenge of Karina came up. And there it was the complete opposite. We're talking about the biggest retail player in Egypt with, we have around 6 to 7 million visitors, just our physical stores alone. So you're talking about a huge footprint of customer touch points where you can change something today and get the feedback instantly today. It was a complete change from the B2B landscape I'm used to. So for me, that was very fulfilling. I started off obviously in a very small role, mainly in the supply chain, and then bit by bit towards brand management, where I managed my own brand. I did horribly, failed miserably at it. But thankfully, I learned a lot during that amazing failure. And this prepped me to keep going in my career within Karina. Today, I've been at Karina for, I would say, close to 12 years. And our current CEO is looking to move on. She wants to do more CSR-related activities. She's the current founder of the brand. She wants to do more CSR-related activities to hand the brand over to an executive team that will be running the day-to-day activities while she focuses on being our chairwoman on the board and on her CSR newly found passion, in a way, I must say. The brand right now is the biggest brand in Egypt. We have around, I would say, around 200 stores. We're growing very rapidly, maybe 5 or 6 stores every month, new. And we have a good online presence also. We sell through all your traditional B2B players, Amazon, all the traditional marketplaces like Amazon, Jumia, Noon, even the local startup marketplaces. And we're constantly in the top 10 for all the categories we feature in. And we also sell through our own B2C channel. So this is more or less where Karina is right now. Where we're looking to go is we're looking to expand regionally. So we're testing out some markets. We have a store now in Riyadh, in Saudi. We have a store in Jeddah. We have a store in Kuwait. In the pipeline, there's Qatar. We actually have a store right now in Iraq that's doing surprisingly well. And a couple of North African countries are also in the pipeline. So this is the future for us. It's going regional. We're right now the biggest player in the Egyptian market. We're looking to eventually become the biggest player in the regional market as well. What products do we sell? We focus on essentials. We are not a fast fashion player. We don't care about trends. We try to be very, very focused in essentials. We offer anything that's essential regarding the woman's outfit every day. So from socks, pajamas, loungewear, blouses for work, bras, underwear, anything a woman would consider essential. This is where we focus on.
So very interesting. So for most of our listeners, as I said, you are the first brand from Egypt. So maybe you can tell us more about how is the e-commerce seen in Egypt? What sort of like maybe market share for you as Karina, where e-commerce is? Is it maybe the volume that of orders that you sell a day online versus maybe marketplace versus offline? Just so the consumers understand more about the market itself also.
Of course, of course. Let me get the consumer up to date on some macro numbers. So Egypt, we're about 100 million citizens. Most of them are between Cairo, Alex, and a couple of other cities. We're not as spread out as a market like Saudi, for example. We're very centralized. I would say right now about 10% of commerce happens online versus offline. This is general commerce, but in fashion, as usual, fashion is still lagging. Fashion right now is around 5% based on the most recent reports we read. In Carina, we're close to 7%. So we're actually leading the market in terms of online versus offline. And Carina is not our only brand. We also have other brands, but Carina is our main flagship brand. So that's why I would be mentioning it a lot.
And what about your digital transformation? Like, when did you go online? Were you one of the first ones to embrace it, or just like during COVID, like jumped on a wagon and start doing it?
Exactly. During COVID, we realized we've been wanting to go online for such a long time, but we've been a victim of our own success because offline was doing so well. So that every board meeting, every executive committee we bring up online, everyone would just be like, yeah, it's still nothing. It's not worth our time right now. And then COVID came and it wasn't an option. We had to go online. We went online with a very quick template-based website that we were not proud of, and very quickly learned that online is not as easy as it looks. And we've been learning and iterating since.
Can you tell us a bit more about the Egyptian market? So obviously, I have not been like to Egypt yet. Carina, for the ones that are listening from like the Western European countries here to this podcast, is it rather to compare with Zara or H&M, like a verticalized brand? Or is it kind of a department store with basics like a Peek & Cloppenburg or others? That's maybe my first question, just to understand where it's coming from. And maybe you can introduce us a bit like more into the buying behaviors, because obviously many Western European countries believe that it's still a very traditional buying behavior, very store related, versus like in the UK, lots of like basic wear is already like shipped via online stores. So just like for the ones, imagine that our listeners have never been to Egypt. What can you compare it with for European brands?
So for the visitors that have never been to Egypt, what are you guys waiting for? Egypt is a beautiful touristic country with beautiful sunlight. Reach out to my LinkedIn and I'll be in the airport waiting for you. But moving on from that. So I would say that we're the most similar to Uniqlo. I wouldn't say Zara just because of how fast Zara is. We're definitely more like Uniqlo in the sense that we focus on high quality essentials at a good value for money price. And yes, everything is owned, designed, manufactured by us. So to answer the first part of the question, in the sense that, is the market traditional? Yes, the market did start off as a very traditional offline market. But what we've become to realize right now is there's a lot of leaps happening. So I'll give you an example from the banking sector. So the banking sector was very delayed. Banking penetration was extremely low, maybe in the early double digits. Right now, it's in the high double digits due to fintech. Everyone's banked, but they're not banked through your traditional banks. So if I'll give a similar example to fashion, right now, you can receive Carina anywhere in Egypt within 20 minutes. That's pioneering compared to the fulfillment rates in Europe. But we did not take the traditional route of 5-day fulfillment, 3-day fulfillment, 2-day fulfillment. No, we started off as 2-day and then made a huge leap through partnering with one of the grocery Q-commerce basically providers. We now provide fashion in 20 minutes. So the market, yes, was very traditional, but due to customer expectations quickly evolving because of social media and access to the internet, there's been leaps in terms of the service provided. So, for example, a video that went viral here was the Noon video, when you guys remember when they launched their 15-minute express service. They launched it in the UAE, but it went viral here. And then customers started asking, why aren't we getting this? Before 10, 15 years ago, when Nike would offer some new service or some new benefit, it would take at least a year or two for my consumer here to be aware of it, for my consumer here to start demanding it. Due to internet and social media, my consumer is as demanding as ever. So we're forced to make these leaps to constantly keep up with consumer expectations. So right now, yes, you can receive Carina anywhere in Egypt within 20 minutes.
Oh, and, that's nice.
But the Egyptian consumers, this is not nice. This is standard. So we're constantly on the treadmill of keeping up with consumer demand.
But what does it mean, like, all these young consumers you have to reach now over social media channels? You've said that your DNA is brick and mortar stores, right? You just expanded via stores and it was a good run so far, opening a couple of new stores every year. Now you're seeing that demand is created in social media. Usually also mean that, like, the demand is here in this mobile device, and all the stores and all the businesses that are closer to the consumer demand will win. Meaning eventually you need to have like an online presence, or you need to sell via TikTok shop. I don't know if this is yet available in Egypt. And this kind of operation you will usually need behind this offering is very different from a store operation, right? You need central warehouses, and it's very hard to do. So I understand you started during Corona your true e-commerce journey, but now, and I understand Egypt has like a rather young population, so young people are moving up, pushing even more, like, on mobile devices, putting more pressure on your channel strategy. Can you enlighten us here a bit how it works?
Most consumers in Egypt, their first time to access the internet was through a phone. So we leaped across the PC era. And like you said, 2/3 of our consumers, I believe, are under 25. I need to double check the statistics, but yes, the majority of our consumers are very young. At the beginning, we looked at this as, okay, how difficult could it be? It's just another shop, except it's online. We learned very quickly that that's not the case. And we then developed it into almost its own business, thinking this is how e-commerce is supposed to be run. We hired a director with the authority of almost a CEO, underneath him a whole team, underneath him a whole supply chain with warehouse, fulfillment, all that. And then recently we've come to learn that the best fit for us actually is a hybrid between both. It's not sustainable to have them in separate islands, and we weren't going to be able to keep up with consumer demand. So for example, for the 20-minute fulfillment thing, we had to take advantage of our current established retail network while blending it with the current tech infrastructure that's available through Q-commerce vendors. And now, as soon as they receive the order, they can pick it up from our closest store and deliver it to the customer. The customer doesn't know any of this. The customer, to him, it's just an order I'm fulfilling. If we didn't have that legacy, traditional, huge retail footprint, we wouldn't be able to do that. We just have one big warehouse somewhere in Cairo that would be at least an hour and a half away from most of our consumers. So in order to do that, we had to take advantage of our legacy footprint and utilize up-and-coming infrastructure and technology to create a hybrid that enabled us to fulfill consumers' expectations and demand.
Can we stick for just a minute on this, like, delivery promise? Because that is something obviously our industry was working on, like, the last 10 years. Like, it was delivered within 3 days, and it was like 1 day, next day, next hour, same 20 minutes. And it's like, it's obviously, it requires a very expensive delivery infrastructure. In your case, it's stores. In other cases, you need a lot of warehouses. And I've discussed this in like many keynotes in the recent months. And what we are realizing now in the European e-commerce industry is that the value proposition of shipping cheaper seems to be more important for many customers, especially now in economic downturns. That's why Shein, Temu, and others are so successful. Mm-hmm. So with just like a 20% of discount, people are willing to wait for more or less the same product they can buy at Amazon 2 weeks. I know you're like not in a comparable space because it's your own brand. So if you create demand for your brand, people have to go to your site. But we're seeing more and more that the whole development into delivering faster is not actually what the customer wants, but the customer wants to have like cheaper products. So price is eventually winning. Is it something you are also seeing in the market?
I want to challenge this by telling you that from what we learned based on our customer and also the research we came across, it's neither. It's not that the customer wants something as fast as possible or that the customer wants something as cheap as possible. What we learned, at least from our consumer, is The customer wants something that's as reliable as possible, meaning I don't care if it's going to get here in 10 days, as long as it will get here on the 10th day, not the 9th, not the 11th. And in the same manner, when I say it's going to be there in 20 minutes, we actually received complaints when we show up in 15. So we realized that it's more about being reliable and doing our best to actually meet that SLA, even if it means that sometimes the store could be on the corner of the address where it's supposed to be delivered, and I have the guy intentionally wait just so they don't show up before schedule. That's one point. Another point is just a macro point. Labor in Egypt is extremely cheap right now. And because of that, it's not as unsustainable as you think it is. We're now looking at stores that are already profitable on the store level that I'm also utilizing as a warehouse. So this, for me, decreases my capex. And then for the delivery person to go from my store within a radius of 10 minutes to deliver in that circle, it's nowhere near as expensive as you think it is. And what we based our model on is the food delivery networks. We had a very serious discussions and we said, okay, guys, if you think of food delivery as a factory that needs to produce on demand, how come these guys are producing on demand a customized product that's personalized to a specific consumer and getting there in 20 minutes? We have the product, it's right there. So I should be actually quicker than him, not the other way around. And this really provoked us to keep pushing that down.
Yeah, very impressive. So like I must say, you know, it's if you bring the service to the GCC countries, you will succeed very quickly, you know, because it's similar consumer. We want to have everything now, and we kind of don't mind the price we pay. So it's refreshing. But as Alex is in love with all the like delivery, let's say, and service, I am always obsessed with the marketing side. So, you know, Egypt, as you said, it's labor is cheap, but the opposite of that is that spending power is also not necessary there. So can you elaborate more about how do you guys acquire the customers? Is it the traditional digital marketing channels like Meta, WhatsApp and all? Or is it that your name is so strong, so that offline is the acquisition channel and then you just switch the offline consumer to online? Can you elaborate more on the consumer like proposition?
I'd be lying and taking credit that's not mine if I said that we're geniuses in online customer acquisition, because we're not. We're just blessed with a brand that has been in the market for the past 20 something years, and we just have very strong equity. And because of that, most of our customers already know our brand. So this makes our job a lot easier. In terms of acquisition, we are following the most traditional routes you could think of, as in Meta, Google, all the basic routes. And our offline stores are also pushing it. And we have some sort of affiliate setup where if that specific store pushes a specific transaction, it actually gets added to their commission. So this helps convert a lot of offline customers to online, versus before when we tried it, our offline stores used to see it as almost competing with their own revenues, and they would sometimes spread misinformation or try to demotivate customers from going.
Nice. And you know, like, so when you just thinking a bit more, like comparing GCC to the Western world. In the Western world, you know, and I can even talk from my clients, you know, sort of West versus Middle East. WhatsApp in the West is still not a big deal. Here in GCC, you know, we are kind of dropping, let's say, some of the traditional digital marketing and going all in on the WhatsApp marketing. What's the trends kind of happening in Egypt? Do you own WhatsApp? Are you embracing TikTok?
Sure.
Are you seeing it working? Can you pick a bit what's unique about the market?
Our preferred method of communication for our customer is definitely WhatsApp. Our customers don't have email access. To them, email is simply a method to register. That's it. So trying to email our customers, newsletters, a lot of the traditional tools that Western markets are more accustomed to are useless here. Here, it has to be through WhatsApp. If I compare Egypt to GCC, Egypt, there's more Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok right now is blowing up. We're not as big on Snapchat and Twitter or X. When we went to the GCC markets, we quickly learned that Snapchat and X there are definitely bigger than Instagram and Facebook.
Saudi specifically.
Exactly. And referring to the point you raised previously, because I forgot to address that about Egypt not having the same spend power. We think that's a bit of a misleading sentiment, because even though Egypt is a much poorer country in terms of GDP per capita, people forget that at the end of the day, we're 100 million people. So if you're looking at 10% of them being affluent, that's three times the UAE. So we still believe that Egypt is a very big market.
I encourage some of my brands, you know, to expand into Egypt, you know. So I agree with you, to be honest.
Speaking of, for GCC brands to come into Egypt, it's a very, very difficult hill to climb. It's a lot easier the other way around. And this would also be enlightening for your Western listeners. Egypt has extremely high restrictions and regulations when it comes to imports of product. So it would be extremely expensive for them to import into Egypt. What I would recommend is definitely come, take advantage of our current very low labor costs and our textile manufacturing capabilities. Egypt is very strong when it comes to textile manufacturing. If you're in the GCC, come manufacture your goods here. 2 days by plane, they'll be in your warehouse. So definitely take advantage of the supply chain the other way around. Don't try to sell into Egypt. You won't be able to compete and you will not enjoy it. To be completely honest.
Alex, Karina Ware in Germany and Karina Ware in UAE, franchise sorted?
I still have the channel question, because Karina Ware, obviously, like building up a direct-to-consumer channel into Germany will be like a tough cookie, because it's very hard like to gain traction. So you need to go via Zalando or others or About You. Yep. That's why I'm still like I'm nagging on the like channel question, because what we've seen in the Western countries that there was a development of like a more multi-brand fashion platform which was like really leveraging economies of scale effect, because it was not only one brand, but like hundreds, thousands of brands, much better warehouse management and a very, very dedicated channel focus, obviously. Mm-hmm. And those have been like the winners of the e-commerce game in Europe last 10 years. Now they're going to be replaced, not yet, but it seems to be, from Shein, as we initially talked about. Though I would be interested if there's like any international platforms or any like multi-brand retailer that was successful in Egypt, and what role those new Chinese platforms are playing now, before we are diving deeper into how and where to sell Karina.
Sure. Right now, we're completely protected from Tmall and Shein due to, like I mentioned, the import restrictions. So if a t-shirt costs $1 in China, for the end consumer to actually import it into Egypt, it will ultimately cost them $4 or $5. So this actually protects us significantly, because, like I said, a big part of the economy relies on our textile production and textile exports. So the government actually protects that by applying a lot of restrictions on imports. So no, we were not affected by Temu and Shein in any way. And I think a lot of countries will start to develop some sort of protection to protect their own markets. Like you saw the news, I think it was yesterday or today, about the US starting to ban the whole below 800 limit issue, where basically any Chinese good that's below $800 was considered as a small private item, not for commerce, so accordingly it would not be taxed. And Shein and Temu are taking huge advantage of this loophole. And we're seeing now the Biden government has put in, I think they announced it today, that they're going to close this loophole, and it's going to become very expensive for Shein and Temu to compete in the US. And then if you look in the wider context of, if we're looking at the Trump presidency in the next 4 years, it's going to be even less convenient for Shein and Temu and all the other equivalents. And if you look at the EU, there is a lot of discussion now about how sustainable these businesses are and how sustainable their labor practices are. So I think a lot of governments are moving in a direction to somehow protect their markets from Shein and Temu.
Just like for me, just for clarification, because like it's very successful, obviously, like Andrew, in Europe. So there's no Shein and Temu offering in Egypt that's working.
There is, but it's not competitive. There is, it's just extremely expensive. So for the customer, I'll cross the street and go into H&M and buy whatever t-shirt I want from there for the same price.
Okay. And I think we somehow skipped like the initial question. So a multi-brand retailing concept in Egypt, is there something that was, because it could have come like from a multi-brand department store. All the concepts we have seen in Europe have failed somehow because they were really just building something around department stores, not really on the online experience. But is there like an online retailer? I believe we had in the podcast earlier that year, or maybe last year, Jumia, for example. It was kind of a multi-category business that must have been set shop in the region. I'm not sure if Namshi ever was active in the region, that was using a software very similar to the software we are offering. But I'm just wondering, so because your success is so outstanding, and usually we have seen e-commerce companies taking all this potential before the verticalized brands could work on this potential.
Yeah, sure. So first off, yes, we do have Namshi, we have Jumia, we have Amazon, we have Noon, and Karina is currently selling through all of them. And I'm proud to say that we're one of the highest sellers in each one of these websites. Why? Not because we're the best at what we do, but because our product is extremely suitable for these platforms. We sell essentials that are basically almost like a replenishment model. So if you know your size, you know your color, you know everything, sure, I'll order it from Amazon while I'm ordering other groceries or electronics or whatever. For other fast fashion players, no, they have not been able to penetrate simply because the user experience is still not as convenient as it is elsewhere. So I was just in the US yesterday. Amazon there is ridiculous. Amazon there is insane. We're expecting a baby, my wife and I. So I was ordering a big, like baby chairs, you know. I received it within the same day, a huge box almost as big as my fridge. We don't have that here. Amazon here is still lagging, but they'll definitely get there. But right now, they're still lagging. We are, however, getting a lot of local startup department stores. So something similar to, well, I can't think of an equivalent, but basically, we have a lot of local up-and-coming designers right now. So we have a lot of platforms that are now consuming these guys in, and they're very Gen Z targeted and Gen Z oriented. And I work with a lot of them, so I know their numbers. They're actually doing very, very well right now. But your traditional players like Marks and Spencer, Debenhams, all these guys, they were in Egypt. And right now, they either exited Egypt or they're owned by a mall operator. So they're just staying there as an anchor. But it's not necessarily that profitable for them.
So what they are looking at sounds really great, you know. So before we finish the podcast and everyone's thinking, wow, you know, maybe we should all fly and check, you know, Karina, where in reality, tell us more, like, so what challenges you face, you know, is it like the growth, because you now reach, you know, every single person in Egypt, thinking, you mentioned that you're thinking of GCC growth, what about expansion into Morocco or like, you know, neighboring countries, and then what are the challenges, you know, like, is it labor, is it digital marketing, is it just more people, tell us more about what's going wrong.
A lot of things are going wrong, and we're proud of that. Expanding regionally has been an uphill battle for us for two reasons. So in Saudi, as I'm sure you know, Saudization or the Sawada has become extremely expensive. So this has really challenged us because this is not how our model operates. Our model is used Egyptian labor costs, which are significantly cheaper. So our labor cost is around 6% of our revenue, which is below actually the traditional benchmarks. In the in Saudi, it can be as high as almost 20%, which has really forced us to reconsider the model in Saudi and reconsider how quickly we plan on growing there. So labor is a big issue. A second issue is cross-border logistics. There's a lot of it's not like the EU where you have free trade. We have free trade, yes, but it's not actually implemented. So applying for Sabre and all the approvals to get our products into Saudi on paper is supposed to be a couple of weeks. It actually took us almost a year. A year of a store with a contract already signed, just sitting there with no goods. So that has been a very big challenge for us, basically learning the logistics and regulations for every single market we're trying to enter. And then the third biggest challenge for us is brand equity. Right here in Egypt, we take it for granted that we're the biggest player, life is easy. Every Egyptian woman knows us and recognizes our name. I go to Saudi, no one there knows us. So it will require a lot of time and investment, and acquisition there for us is extremely expensive because of the lack of brand equity. And the same for, since you brought up Morocco, it's the same for Morocco, where we were surprised actually were the more underdeveloped markets. So in Iraq right now, we're doing really, really well, even though Iraq is very high competition due to a lot of Turkish brands dominating the market there. But we were surprised. So we think maybe our future is in more underdeveloped markets just because we found them as easier wins. But ultimately, yes, we will be in Saudi. The plan is to eventually shift from being headquartered in Egypt to being headquartered in Saudi, simply for macroeconomic reasons. We think the future is there.
Very impressive. Very impressive. Alex, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I have one last question because one of my research topics right now is actually the demographic shift. And most of the European countries, South America, even China, do have this problem that they are shrinking. Well, less people are living there. And so there's like economic theory that especially the countries that are growing do have a bright future. I know Saudi is a rather young country, but it's small. It's like 30 million people are living there, right?
Yeah.
And some of the prospects for potential winners are Nigeria and Egypt. Maybe I'm wrong and maybe I read the data wrong, but from all the things I could understand is, isn't it now the time to build in Cairo and Egypt because it's so young and prospering and all the stuff is happening there?
Sure. Let me answer Nigeria first. Nigeria, for us, culturally, there is a big gap. Nigeria right now is very influenced by South Africa. So South Africa kind of dominates the influence sphere of sub-Saharan Africa, as opposed to in Egypt. Egypt is almost like the Hollywood of the Middle East. So a lot of the cultural influence in the Middle East comes out of Egypt. This makes expanding regionally in the GCC a lot easier for us. So that's why we're kind of postponing sub-Saharan Africa for now. And add to that Nigeria is not the easiest place to do business for foreign entities. And unfortunately, Egypt right now is the same. If you look at some of the major world indexes that come out, like Ease to Do Business or any one of these, unfortunately, we rank very, very low there. So I understand how demographically we might seem extremely promising, but economically, I wouldn't say that's the case. Egypt is very, very leveraged. We're looking at another devaluation soon. We already went through 3 devaluations. So I'm afraid we're going in the direction of a lot of people and just not enough money to go around. So demographically, yes, we are growing. We are very promising. But financially, the market is, the economy, in a sense, is built on just borrowing money. And I think soon we'll run out of borrowing money. Everything's subsidized. Gas is subsidized, fuel is subsidized, labor is subsidized, transportation is subsidized. Egypt is not a major exporter of fuel like the GCC, but somehow we're competing with the GCC in terms of fuel prices. So everything here is subsidized. That's why it makes so much sense for a lot of your listeners to come take advantage of this and manufacture in Egypt. But if any of your listeners are thinking of establishing business in Egypt, learn from your peers. Marks and Spencer was here, they're looking to leave. Decathlon was here, looking to leave. H&M recently significantly downsized, simply because with every devaluation, they become extremely expensive compared to the local market. So yeah. I really highly wouldn't recommend it. And that's part of why we're looking to expand, to leverage ourselves and to have some sort of FX income.
That's very interesting. Yeah,
it was too pessimistic of a view.
No, with these positive words, it's like, it's what this podcast is for, right? We have to speak the truth and like to understand. Yeah. So what's going on? And it's interesting to, you know, it's an interesting side conversation to have like in Berlin and, you know, even people from Egypt are now moving into Saudi because there's a future. It's good to know, and we are hearing it at all the conferences. Lina and I are hanging around at all the Seamless conferences in the region, and that's what everybody's saying, right? It's like if something is happening in the region, it's going to be Saudi, it's Riyadh or it's Jeddah, it's going to be there.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah. It's just like this kind of what you just said is something I cannot read out of economic reports or data. I need to get it from an entrepreneur, from somebody who's really in the market and sees it every day. So So that's for me. So thank you for that. So that alone was worth recording a podcast.
Of course. Okay.
Then for the next travel booking, I definitely reach out to you because you just like offered assistance on the airport in Cairo, what I understood correctly.
not just the airport, huh? Yeah. Not just the airport. Okay. You're more than welcome. We love supporting anyone that comes to Egypt. So we'll be very happy making introductions for you with a lot of the local retail players here. We're very happy to organize whatever you need. A lot of people helped us when we were still starting. So whenever there's an opportunity to help anyone else out, we try to strive for it. And this isn't just for you. Of course, this is open to your listeners also. My LinkedIn will be
available. We will share your LinkedIn in the show notes, maybe not your WhatsApp number, but let's start with LinkedIn so people can apply. So,
and I have a team, like most of my employees are from Egypt. So I'll send them my best regards and I'll say that Musa promised you can come to the store, discount on the CEO's name. But if the same offer stands here, if you come to Dubai, you know, definitely give me a shout, coffee on me, and we will do a tour, you know, also introductions, you know, how we can expand and all into this part of the, let's say, world.
Sure thing. Okay. If your team are not already Karina customers, I'll be very upset with them. So
they are all your customers. So when I told about your podcast, they're like, wow, we can't believe it. You're having him on the podcast. So you are definitely a celebrity.
Perfect. Then they can come over and have our employee discount. They're part of the team for sure.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.